connected by purpose, driven by passion. This is Children's Healthcare Canada's Spark Conversations podcast series.
Welcome to Spark Conversations, Children's Healthcare Canada's monthly podcast series. At the crossroads of children's healthcare, system improvement, and leadership, Spark Conversations is a solutions-focused podcast that connects the child health community with system leaders who tackle wicked problems and discuss ideas to inform the development of innovative and integrated systems serving children and youth. Spark Conversations is one component of the newly refreshed Spark Knowledge Mobilization Program. Spark is the shared platform for advocacy, research, and knowledge. I'm Sarah Preston-Thomas, guest hosting for Paula, and today we are delighted to be speaking with Dr. Catherine Smart. Dr. Catherine Smart is a pediatrician in Whitehorse, Yukon, and current president of the Canadian Medical Association. Her work is centered on developing collaborative partnerships with community and government services to serve marginalized children using a model of social pediatrics. She works primarily with children who have experienced trauma and adverse childhood events, and she witnesses the broad and lasting impacts these events have on children and their development daily. She is passionate about improving services for marginalized children in an effort to change their life trajectory. In addition to her community-based work, Dr. Smart enjoys acute care and provides on-call services to the hospital. Before moving to the Yukon, she was a pediatric emergency medicine physician at the Alberta's Children's Hospital in Calgary. Dr. Smart is the past president of the Yukon Medical Association. We had such a great conversation with Dr. Smart that we have split the interview up into two parts. They can be consumed together or separately. This is part one, where we'll be talking about myths and disinformation in Canadian healthcare. In part two, we talk about healthcare collapse, staff burnout, and Canadian healthcare moving forward. Dr. Smart, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. It's great to be here with you.
Great. So you are soon coming up to the end of your term as president of the Canadian Medical Association. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. You know, I'm handing over to a wonderful colleague, Dr. Alika LaFontaine. So that makes it a little bit easier. I feel really good about the work that we did this year. And I still have another year as past president. So they're not quite finished with me yet. So I have a lot of exciting things on my agenda for the fall as well. So I'm really grateful for the time I've had in this role. I've enjoyed it a lot. But, you know, it's always fun to look to future and new opportunities as well.
Amazing. Well, we're excited to have you here throughout the midst of your transition to your next role. For those of you who've listened to this podcast before, you'll know we love to talk about wicked problems, of which Canadian healthcare has no shortage. Dr. Smart, one of the problems that you have been vocal about throughout your time leading the CMA is the mis- and disinformation in child healthcare and healthcare in general. What impacts of mis- and disinformation concern you most, and how do we work towards solving this problem?
I think the threat of misinformation should absolutely not be underestimated. And I think it's really deepening, spreading, getting worse right now, and arguably might be at the peak of what we've seen so far sort of in modern times. And I think it really is an emerging and serious threat to health. And I think where we're seeing it right now most acutely in terms of child health is around vaccinations. So, you know, with all the sort of anti-vaccine rhetoric around the COVID-19 vaccine, I think it seeded a lot of doubt in people's minds. And that combined with just practical barriers to keeping your child's immunizations up to date as a lot of public health resources were pivoted to the pandemic, we've seen a huge drop off in children receiving the routine vaccines. And we're hearing that, you know, 1 in 4 Canadian children is now behind on their vaccines. Globally, we've seen, you know, the worst sort of backtracking on childhood vaccination again in the last 20 odd years. And we're starting to see reemergence of diseases like polio, which actually showed up in the United States recently, resulting in paralysis of an unvaccinated child. So these are things that, you know, I've not seen in my over 20 years as a pediatrician because they were largely sequestered to sort of remote parts of the globe. But this is the risk when we fall behind on these things that we've come to take for granted, is they come back. And I think the real threat of mis- and disinformation is undermining these very significant health advances that have changed the landscape of child health in a very real way and going back in time. And I think that's a bit of where we find ourselves right now.
Yeah. And so how do you think we can go about ensuring that people understand the urgency of this and getting people kind of back on track with their vaccinations.
Yeah, I think the role of effective communication is so important right now. And I think that's another real lesson from the pandemic, just how challenging good science communication is. You know, I think particularly when you're sort of battling the power of social media, it really needs a bit of a rethink about how we communicate with the public, right? Because one of the things I think we've come to understand is that currently most people get their information from social media. You know, a recent study showed that 65% of Canadians get their news from Facebook, as opposed to, you know, the Globe and Mail or CBC or other sort of tried and true journalism channels. And when we communicate as health professionals, we're often not leveraging those spaces as well as we could. So we're sort of competing with, you know, the celebrity culture, the wellness influencer culture, all of whom have sort of really honed their skills of persuasion and are really leveraging those platforms effectively. So I think to counter this, we've got to start using those same tools. And we're seeing some great examples of that. You know, we've seen Science Up First, COVID Vaccine Facts, you know, Children Healthcare Canada, even your organization is a great example, have been trying to create accessible opportunities for families to access information in a low barrier way, trying to leverage social media to do that. I think we're going to need to be doing more of that. I think we need to start thinking of this as a skill set for physicians and other healthcare professionals in terms of moving our communication beyond that individual doctor-patient interaction more broadly to our communities and arguably even our country, so that we have recognizable faces who the public trusts, who can be countering this misinformation with good information and making sure that people have their questions answered. Because, you know, I think sometimes the most dangerous thing is just that little bit of doubt. And I've seen that throughout my career as a pediatrician. You know, many families I meet who have not vaccinated their children, when you really have a conversation with them, you know, it's a small percentage that are truly hardcore anti-vaccine. Most of them are uncertain. And it's that uncertainty that creates inaction. And what I think I've come to understand is that for many people, you know, a choice not to do something is easier than an active choice to do something. And a lot of times our role is to sort of walk people down that path and support them towards making that active decision to go ahead with vaccination. But I think we've got to start doing that not only with our individual patients, but more broadly in our communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's interesting when we talk about mis and disinformation is especially in context of where we are right now in healthcare. I think right now we're in a stage where we're really striving to recognize patients, and in the case of children, also their parents' knowledge and expertise on their own health, and treating them as partners in their care in a patient-centered approach. So I guess my question to you is, how do we balance that relationship between treating patients and their family members as experts and partners while still acknowledging and respecting the expertise of health professionals, especially when patients are dealing with misinformation?
I think that's such a great and important question, and it's something that all of us really need to think about. And again, I think it really comes down to understanding the relationship, and the term partner, I think, is important, right? Because we are really talking about partnering with families. And to me, being a partner with anybody or any situation means, you know, there's going to be different balances of power and knowledge in that relationship. And a partnership suggests that you work together. And I think what's important in the doctor-patient relationship is to recognize that, you know, especially when you're talking about pediatricians treating children, parents are experts in their children. You know, they know when their child's acting like themselves, when they're not. They know what's normal for their child. They know what's not normal. They know how their family functions. They know the intricacies of their history and their story. And those things are so important. But parents don't always have the medical information. And I think that's where we need to be there as the partner, offering that expertise and framing it as such, you know, and making sure that we're really open to questions, that we're approaching people in an empathetic way, that we're listening with compassion, that we're opening the door to conversations, but also that we're clear about what information is accurate and inaccurate. You know, I think it's a mistake to sometimes act like there's more than one version of the truth, because for some things there actually isn't. You know, the science on vaccines is clear. There's no sort of refuting it. So I think we need to present that to families, not in an aggressive way, but just in a way that makes it very clear to them that this isn't really something where there's any doubt about the benefit, and that your role, and I'll often express it like that to families, is to just really to make sure that that's clear, and that you're happy to answer any questions they have or anything they've heard that's made them uncomfortable. But you just really want to be clear with them that, you know, as an expert, as a pediatrician, it's your strong recommendation that this is what happens. Now, of course, ultimately what people do with that information is up to them. But I think we have to be careful when we're navigating partnerships to make sure that we're not interpreting partnership as downplaying our opinions or not being straightforward or not stating clearly what our recommendations are, but rather recognizing who carries what expertise in what context, and making sure when we're having those communications that we're doing it respectfully.
Mm-hmm. And I think especially when it comes to children's healthcare, where parents are making these decisions for children, that can obviously have huge impacts on their health when it comes to vaccinations. How can physicians and clinicians kind of cope if parents decide to make a decision that they maybe don't agree with or that was not recommended?
I think it's all about recognizing that we're one tool in someone's toolbox. You know, like I'd say the one thing I've really learned in over 20 years of doing this job is my job is to present people with the information, the facts, to build a trusting relationship so they can feel confident in my advice. But it is their decision whether they take my advice or not. So if we disagree on something, my goal is always to maintain the relationship, to keep that door open in case there's an opportunity later on to revisit the conversation, or perhaps, you know, they hear or learn something different that brings them back or open to hearing something else. So to me, what's fundamental is always making sure that that respectful relationship's there, but being very clear about what I recommend, but also just recognizing that ultimately, you know, I can't be responsible for all the decisions other people make. I'm responsible for how I show up in the relationship, the quality of the information that I give, and my ability to communicate clearly and with compassion. So, and in my experience, you know, most of the time when you show up that way and you have that relationship with people, it usually turns out really quite well. I think it's when we don't sort of respect that people may see things differently, that sometimes the relationship ends up being kind of the price you pay. And I think that's never a win, because in medicine, you know, and this is the beauty of longitudinal care, when you get to know people over time, what you realize is, you know, a decision today may not be a decision tomorrow or next month or even next year. So I often feel like my job is to be there, be present, be accepting, so that when people are ready to hear what I have to say, that I'm there and ready to tell them.
Mm-hmm. I love that about putting the partnership of the relationship between physicians and or clinicians and patients first to really build that foundation of trust. So I guess in terms of having those conversations, I think one of the other big topics around healthcare in Canada recently has been how overwhelmed the system has been. So I guess my next question to you is, how do we make space for these really important conversations surrounding misinformation with patients and family members when so many of our clinicians are already stretched thin and may not feel that they have the time that is necessary to sufficiently address these topics?
Yeah, it's such a challenge right now, as you said, you know, with the system being so overwhelmed. And I think there's a few factors. You know, right now, as we're seeing this rise of dis and misinformation, we're also seeing really the worst access to primary care providers that we've probably ever seen. You know, 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 Canadians doesn't have a longitudinal family doctor. So that was always a source of a trusted relationship for people where these types of conversations could have been happening. And of course, again, over time, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to address every concern, every visit, but that's the point of longitudinal care, is to be able to come in and out of these conversations and revisit these things. So, you know, a fundamental problem right now is many people don't even have access to that to begin with. Then for people who are fortunate enough to have access to a family doctor, a pediatrician, a nurse practitioner, public health nurse, you know, whoever that healthcare professional is, like you said, it then becomes down to, you know, finding the time. But I think the reality is, you know, we have to always find time to prioritize the things that are the most important. And there's no question that prevention is critical. So I think talking about vaccination with families to me is an essential part of what we do. We know it's critical to the health of children. It's a conversation that we need to find time for. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to dive into the whole thing at the first visit. You know, for me, if I'm bringing it up and I can see there's a lot of questions, I may answer the main questions they have, but I may say, you know, I really value this conversation with you. I really want us to make sure that it has the time it deserves, and yet you feel comfortable that you have the time you need to have all your questions answered. So today, this is all the time I've got, but I would love for you to come back. Let's rebook another appointment. And the purpose of that appointment just being to carry on this conversation. And that's often a way you can sort of bring people back, give them the time that they deserve, not make them feel rushed, because that's never helpful when you're trying to talk about something that people are uncertain about. And also just respect the time that you may have available that day. So I think it's just recognizing that we can't do everything every time, but that's always the beauty of the follow-up.
Yes, I suppose it always comes back to balancing those relationships. Thank you so much, Dr. Smart. Catherine is always a fantastic speaker, and we are lucky enough to have her joining us at our annual conference taking place this November 29th to December 1st for our closing keynote. Check out our website for registration details and to secure your spot. This is the end of part one in our two-part series with Dr. Catherine Smart. Tune into part two to listen in on our conversation surrounding healthcare collapse, staff burnout, and where we go from here. To stay up to date on all of our Spark offerings, including upcoming podcast episodes, visit our website at childrenshealthcarecanada.ca and subscribe to our Spark News biweekly bulletin if you haven't already. And before we go, show some love to your new podcast series by leaving us a review. Thanks for listening to Spark Conversations.